This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
You're listening to the Voices of the Vic podcast with Ben Ayton and Mike Duffy.
Hello and welcome to the Voices of the Vic podcast with me, Mike Duffy. And this time, at the moment, I'm joined by just James Batchelor from the Watford Way. Hopefully Ben will be joining us at some stage in this recording, although it is 7:30 now and he has got football at 8 o'clock. So there's a possibility he won't be able to join, unfortunately. But you may hear from him, you may not. I'll say hello on his behalf. He does obviously say hello to everyone that he's listening. But as I say, I am with James Batchelor from the Watford Way. James is going to be joining us more regularly this season to get our teeth into the games and hopefully victories. And James, that's what we're here to talk about today. We're talking about Watford's 3-1 victory against Norwich. But before we get started, how's things with you? It's been a while since you've been on. How's everything been?
Yeah, it's been a good while. I'm all good. Just looking forward to getting back to the Vic this week. Two games in 4 days, I think it is. So very much looking forward to that. And as I mentioned before the pod, Mike, I'm off to the O2 for the AJ Usyk weigh-in press conference. So I can't get to the fight, which is a shame. But yeah, looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, good stuff, man. I'm jealous of you for going through that. I've always wanted to go to a boxing match, but yeah, I mean, I know it's not the boxing match you're going to, but I'm sure the weigh-in will be a good atmosphere as it is anyway.
Hopefully it kicks off.
Yeah, that's what you want. That is definitely what you want. You know, tables flying, chairs flying, that's what you want. So yeah, fingers crossed you get a bit of entertainment. But with myself, I've been very, very busy this weekend, actually. I was in Blackpool from Friday and got back yesterday. We're recording this on Monday, by the way, so got back on Sunday. No special reason, really. Just went up with my boss and a few of the lads and their girlfriends round in where I live at the moment. And we went up to Blackpool and yeah, it was as Blackpool you'd expect it to be. It was very messy at times, and luckily I managed to catch final score and the goals coming in, and I celebrated like mad when we went up. And we were in this bar, right, and it come up on final score. Bearing in mind there was a singer playing, so all the TVs were turned, sort of the volume was off, so it was 2-1 to us, and in the corner it said VAR, and it said it for ages, and I was like, oh my god, like, has someone scored? Has there been a disallowed goal? Yeah. And then it flashed up, and the score changed to 3-1. So I was like, thank god for that. The last thing we would have needed is Norwich equalising. But as I say, we are here to talk about the game, and as always, we'll start with the team news. And for myself, I was very surprised with one of the changes, I'll be honest, but I'll just run through the team for those that didn't see. It was Foster in goal, a back four of Danny Rose, Craig Cathcart, Troostekong, Kong, and Kiko Femenia. It was good to see him back. Midfield, it was Sissoko, Cleverley, and Kushka. Sorry, if anyone listened to last week's podcast, they'll know now the official pronunciation of Kushka. So it was Kushka in midfield as part of that midfield three with Cleverley and Sissoko. And then it was Dennis, King, and Saar as the front three. Now, a couple of things with this lineup. Firstly, Foster coming in, there was reports, Adam Leventhal broke the news before the game that Backman was due to miss out due to an injury. I can't remember whether he said it was his foot or his leg.
Yeah, I think it was his knee, actually.
His knee, yeah. So that one was quite a surprise. And then there was no Serielta as well, which was also a bit of a surprise for me. It was good to see Kiko come in. But what I found odd was Backman was injured, but he was on the bench. So I don't know whether that meant Elliot was injured as well, so they had no choice but to put Backman on the bench. But
after the game, Mike, I watched Sisko's post-match press conference back.
Yeah.
Adam actually asked Sisko, he said, oh, is it true that Backman's got a knee injury? And then Zisco actually said no, it was purely tactical, and he wanted Foster to play.
Well, that is very, very interesting. I mean, James, what do you make of that? Because before we talk about the rest of the changes that happened, funnily enough, me, you and Ben had this discussion last season in terms of Backman or Foster as a number one. But there has been a few calls now, whether to say they're the right calls or not. You know, personally, my personal opinion, I don't think they're the right calls. But there has been a few calls on Twitter for people wanting Foster to come back in. Maybe they're suggesting that Backman isn't maybe looking comfortable in the Premier League, and he's making a few mistakes, and his distribution can be a bit off sometimes. And you know, that goal against Tottenham, in my opinion, he should have saved it. So you know, there have been a few people calling for Foster to come back in. What's your view been on it? Was you surprised to see Foster in? Was you happy to see Foster in, or did you think Backman deserved another shot at it?
Yeah, I expected the change to happen at some point during the season, just because obviously from what we've seen of Backman so far, it's not been fantastic. But I do think it was quite a rash decision. You know, I think Backman should have at least been given until what, the next international break in a few weeks' time, because you know, he has looked a bit shaky, but he's not actually, you know, apart from that Tottenham mistake, which as you say should have saved, he's not made, you know, a glaring error, I don't think. And we know Foster also has errors in him as well. So I think both keepers have their pros and cons, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah. And look, he didn't enjoy the best of international breaks as well, Danny Backman. Austria lost 5-2 to Israel, so conceding 5 goals there. And then losing to Scotland as well, although I didn't watch that match, but I'm told he made a couple of good saves in that match. But ultimately, I think the goal for Scotland, from memory, I think, well, from what I heard, I think it was a penalty. So usually he's decent at saving penalties. You never expected to save a penalty. If you do, you're a hero. That's what David Seaman always used to say. So I'm not going to be, you know, kicking off that he's not saving penalties. But I think there was a couple of shaky moments from him in the international break as well, which definitely wouldn't have helped. So it was... It was interesting to see that, and to hear that he was injured and then see him on the bench, I was thinking, that's a bit odd. And then I didn't know what you just said as well, so that makes it even more.
It wasn't actually very well publicised on social media after the game, but I just watched back Zisco's post-match press conference, and he said it was tactical.
Yeah, so, you know, and just quickly as well, before we move on to the other changes, I just want to say we just received a message from Ben, who's actually hoping to join in a couple of minutes, which is quite interesting, because I thought he had football, but nonetheless, we'll move on. Would you keep Foster for the next game, considering, you know, we won 2-1, I didn't personally watch the game. You watched the game. How was his performance? Was he one that's worthy of keeping his place, or would you then go and change it again, maybe? Or do you think too much change will cause disruption?
It was an interesting performance. I wouldn't say he did anything largely wrong. The only questionable bit from Foster, you know, during the Norwich game was for Pukki's goal. He kind of got caught in no man's land a little bit. He didn't know whether to stay or go. He was kind of in the middle, and Pukki kind of just, it's kind of like a dink shot. It wasn't really a dink, but he did place to finish Pukki. And I think Foster probably could have done better there.
I'd think so, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought overall it was a decent performance. But it'll be interesting to see who actually plays in the cup against Stoke, because ultimately, you know, whoever plays then, we know that in the Premier League game coming up, it will either be, you know, if let's say Batman plays in the cup, we know that Foster will pretty much play against Newcastle. Mm-hmm. So it'd be interesting to see really who plays against Stoke, because I think that'll give us a bit more information as to what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. It will be interesting to see who plays against Stoke. And look, Foster's been the cup goalkeeper. So obviously we've had that change at the weekend where Foster's gone back in for, now we know, as tactical reasons. Will he then change the cup goalkeeper because Foster was in goal against Crystal Palace? Who knows? It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on, definitely. But another one, James. CRL to not in. Obviously scored an own goal against Wolves last week, which was far from ideal, and was, I wouldn't say completely to blame for their second goal, but he certainly, you know, could have done better, I think. Do you think, again, that was another tactical change? Was you surprised to see him left out, or do you think it was maybe the right idea, give him a maybe a week off to sort of refresh and hopefully come back in and be at his best, like we know CRL to Canberra?
Well, this is for me, this is even more odd than the Foster Batman situation because we've had really no communication from the club as to what's actually happened with Serialta. He's not been confirmed as injured. So the club usually posts something before the game saying, you know, this player's injured, this player's not available. We've seen nothing regarding him in terms of that. And he wasn't really mentioned by Zisco either. So I don't know whether he was just, as you say, dropped from the squad completely to maybe clear his mind. But you know, I'd much prefer Serialta in obviously over Cathcart, your partner Schuster-Cocks. So hopefully we'll at least see Serialta return for that Stoke game, if not the Newcastle game.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, who hopefully if he does come back in, that Wolves game is completely in the back of his mind, fresh mindset, and he can be back to that rock that we know at the back. But in terms of the rest of the selections, obviously we saw Keiko come back in. How good was it to see Keiko and Sarr again on the same pitch?
Oh my God, it was so good. We know the connection they've got, and we saw it in the championship last year. And I think it, you know, it's evident with the first goal that Dennis scored as well. It was such a good cross by Keiko. And all game, really, they were tearing that Norwich left-hand side to shreds, really. Brandon Williams is a good player, but I thought, you know, Sarr and Keiko really had him on toast for that game. They were just, you know, until Keiko went off, you know, that was definitely the most. It was just, I don't have words for it really. It was just absolutely fantastic. And yeah, it was great to see Kiko back.
Yeah, and I think he's actually been ruled out of tomorrow's game against Stoke, so he's picked up
Yeah.
another little knock. So
I wouldn't have risked him in that anyway, really, though.
no, definitely not. I'd imagine we'll see Ngakia at right back tomorrow. But I don't know whether I've not actually read the article that says about the injury. I've just seen that he's been ruled out. But hopefully it's not a long-term injury, because Keiko's only just got back from an injury, so to lose him again would be quite catastrophic, to be honest. And I you know, got nothing against Ngakia, but I just think the way that Sarr and Keiko link up, it'd be a disappointing, well, it'd be disappointing to see him sort of out the team again, and Sarr struggling because of it. Well, I say struggling because of it. He's done all right since, but he definitely, I personally think his A game sort of gets bumped up when he's got someone like Keiko behind him. So, fingers crossed, he's not out for too long. But in terms of the game itself, we're obviously going into this one. I want to get your opinion on something here, James, because I personally thought, even though it's so early on in the season, I had this down as a bit of a must win, purely because, you know, we haven't enjoyed the best start to the season. Only one win to our name before that, and we'd struggled to score in the last three league games, I think it's been. So obviously, and I've gone on record and said I actually think this is the best attacking sort of options we've had in the Premier League since we got re-promoted back in 14-15 season. So, you know, I was very, very surprised that it hasn't quite clicked. But big game. Did you have this down as a must win, or do you think it's too early to be throwing those sort of tags around?
I personally didn't have it down as a must win. I had it down as a must not lose. So, you know, if circumstances arose, I would have taken a draw. But I think for Zisco and Zisco's future at the club, it was a must win because if Zisco had then lost against Norwich, then really his future at Watford was dependent on whether we beat Newcastle or not. And he has taken the pressure off himself quite significantly by getting them 3 points against Norwich. So for me, it was just, you know, don't embarrass yourselves, lads. Whereas for Zisco, I think it was, you know, he had to win that game to keep the fans on the side, really.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned this in the last podcast that we did. Me and Ben were talking about it, whereby, you know, I said that from the next couple of games, we would have had to have really been looking at getting bare minimum, and I say bare minimum, of 4 points. So obviously, you know, good start with getting 3 points on the board already. As I just said, you know, I was talking to Ben about this. Ben's actually joined us. So, Ben, how are you doing this evening, buddy?
Yeah, evening, boys. Sorry if I'm late to the party.
No,
I hope it's been a good show so far. I imagine it has been. Yeah, I'm all right, boys. How are you both doing? You all right?
Good stuff. Yeah, absolutely fine. Just talking about the relieving 3-1 win for us. Now, Ben, you've actually come at a good time because I was just asking James, did you sort of have this down as a must-win game for us, or do you think it's too early to be throwing those sort of tags around?
It was the team that you're probably more likely to get 3 points out of. I don't know if it was a must win. It's so early into the season. If it's like coming down to like the last 5-6 games of the season where you're actually fighting for your life and a win is a must and you've got to avoid relegation, then I'd put that into a must win category. I think it's, especially against a team that you've came up with, you kind of expect to probably get a performance out of a man 3 points. But yeah, I wouldn't have said it was a must win. Where do you stand on this? Is it a must win for you?
I think so. You both make very, very good points here, because you know it is so early on in the season, and to call it a must win to some people is absolutely crazy. But I
don't know if saying must win shows them a bit of not as much enough respect in my eyes. If you're saying must win, like, I find it a bit disrespectful.
To Watford?
To the opposition, because no one deserves to turn up and pick up 3 points. And if you're saying must win, you're kind of showing a bit of disrespect to the opposition, because you never know what team's going to turn up on the day, and they might play you off the park. And yeah,
I think that's what I was worried about, is us messing it up. Like, we know our record against Norwich recently has been brilliant. It's, you know, Cisco's record against Daniel Farker and Norwich is, he's 100% record, isn't he? So, you know, he knows how to, he's got Norwich's number every time so far. But I just, the last thing that I think we needed as a team, I think the last thing that Cisco needed as a manager in terms of his position was to lose this game. And we don't want to be going into, you know, these, we've got a tough running coming in November, and you know it's almost the end of September now, so we've got a really, really tough running. So the last thing that we need is to not be picking up points in the games where we should be picking up points, if you get what I mean. Like, you know, we beat Norwich, luckily. For me, I think I personally wouldn't be happy with a draw against Newcastle. Again, I might get a bit of backlash for that. But I think we should be looking at beating Newcastle, especially because we're at home. I think definitely, you know, should, after the disappointment against Wolves as well, we need to be picking up as many points as we can at home, because it is going to be tough on the road. So hopefully against Newcastle we can pick something up. But I've massively gone off on a tangent there, Jones, because I was saying, what a brilliant start to the game it was. 17 minutes on the clock to put any sort of nerves to bed. Emmanuel Dennis, second goal of the season for him, heads it in the goal. Brilliant cross from Kiko. And just the start that we needed, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, I've got to say, his celebration as well was absolutely world class. The backflip was absolutely incredible. But yeah, great cross by Kiko. I think we know that's what Kiko can offer. Going forward is a lot better than Jeremy Ngakia. Defensively, Ngakia is probably better, but you saw what the delivery from Kiko there. It was absolutely great. Into the right area. And you know, Dennis, he's not actually that tall, that physical, but he did really well to get across. I think it was Grant Hanley and head that back into the bottom left-hand corner. And great start, great header, and 1-0 to Watford.
It was indeed. And, you know, a few sighs of relief, because, to be honest, I was nervous going into the game. Norwich, I think, it still stands this record, but going into the game, they were the only team in the top four tiers not to pick up a single point. So, you know, that was definitely playing on my mind. You know, it would be such a Watford thing to do, to turn up to a team that hasn't picked up any points yet this season and completely fluff something. But luckily, that was the start that we needed. However, it wasn't all sort of roses and unicorns, as they say. You know, it wasn't pretty for the rest of it. We did sort of, there was a bit of squeaky bum time, Ben. 35 minutes in, Timu Pukki levelled it for the visitors. James actually said, and I agreed with him, that Foster perhaps could have done a little bit better, whether he was coming out quicker or making himself bigger or whatnot. But Timu Pukki fired them level. Was you worried at all? Because obviously we then went into the break at 1-1. Was you maybe worried that we were only going to be coming away with a point? Did you think maybe that Norwich would maybe take a bit of momentum being the home team and maybe go on to win it? What were your thoughts when they equalised and we went into the break at 1-1?
Well, it took Pukki four attempts to finally score against us, didn't he? So fair play to him. But yeah, we shouldn't be conceding goals like that. It looked like Foster was in two minds, wasn't it, whether he was going to come or not come. I don't know if there was a miscommunication between him and Craig Cathcart. But to concede a goal at that point of a time in the first half, where, to be fair, Watford probably dominated that first half. We had the better chances as well, and it was like we shot ourselves in the foot there. It was an avoidable goal, and it was just how we was going to react at half time after that. But I thought we reacted quite well, because just before half time, Ismail Assar went through one-on-one with Tim Krul, and it was just a fingertips to put it past the post. And if we scored then, then I think I wouldn't have seen Norwich coming out in that second half, because that would have dampened their spirits.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, I probably should have highlighted this earlier on in the episode, but when the Norwich team news come out, they were absolutely buzzing with it. Like, they were so like, this is what we want to see and all this. And I was thinking, uh-oh, like, that's not good. I usually like going on the opposition's Twitter when they've announced the team news and they're all kicking off. Why are you playing him? Why are you playing him? Why are we playing this way? But it was completely the opposite. They were absolutely buzzing with that team. So, you know, for them to get a goal just before half time, probably not ideal. Obviously, then in the second half, you know, we dealt a little bit of, well, I think quite a big blow. We dealt a blow. Kiko coming off for Ngakia. Hopefully, it's not too bad. But 63 minutes on the clock, Ismail Assar does what Ismail Assar does. And funnily enough, it was weird, Ben, because we're used to seeing Assar do this, but hugging that touchline was Josh King, and he pulled it back across, and there was Ismail Assar to tap it in. How good was Josh King, by the way? I've seen a lot of, you know, I think he's claiming the assist for that second goal, which, to be honest, I'm not having, because he says that he hit off his leg on the way there. But again, another game where Josh King's showing what he can do. But Ben, was you impressed with Josh King's performance?
First half, Josh King was good. Second half, he was phenomenal. He really stepped it up second half. I was really impressed with him. For that goal that we, the second goal that we scored, Josh King was actually in the central role. And it was Ngakia that slid the ball down the side, down the line for him to run onto. It was a great darting run to make space, and he completely lost for his Norwich man, and he just got to the byline just in time. And that was great awareness, because he's a striker in himself. He knows what kind of areas he wants to receive the ball in. So he looked up just before he received the ball. He saw Ismail Assar making that run towards the front post, and it was great work. You can tell that's the kind of things that Watford are working on in training. The combination between the three, Ismail Assar, Emmanuel Dennis and Josh King, they just interchange their position. You don't know who's going to be playing through the middle. They just confuse the defenders, and it's exciting to see. This is the best attacking lineup we've had for a very long time at Watford.
Yeah, but funnily enough, I said that earlier in this episode as well. But James, we saw Josh King miss quite an easy chance against Wolves. You know, it was an open goal, but the way the ball, the pace of the ball come at him and maybe getting his feet, you know, it's probably harder than it actually looked to put that in. But it's so good to see him still, you know, keep coming and, you know, keep fighting. And he got an assist at the weekend. Do you think that Josh King's going to get back to that player he was at Bournemouth, where he scored them goals and, you know, helped assist the, you know, Callum Wilson and whoever else they play up front? But are you excited to see what Josh King's got in his locker for the rest of this season?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as Ben said, this is definitely, you know, in terms of attacking players, you've got Cucho, Pedro, Dennis, Sarr, King. Like, when have we ever had such a large plethora of attacking talent at Watford. I've not really seen it in my time supporting Watford. You know, Deeney Aghalo in their prime was good. You know, we've had Vidra. You know, we've had loads of good players. But in terms of, you know, playing in the Premier League at the highest level, the interchangeability, the pace, the power. I mean, you know, you were never going to get Troy Deeney, you know, playing right wing, left wing, really, were you? So yeah, it's fantastic.
He did under Malky Mackay.
He played, that's a very, very long time ago.
In fact, funnily enough, his debut was against Norwich, and I'm pretty sure he played right mid that game back in 2010-11 season. Yeah. So, yeah, that a little bit of a throwback for you there. But, yeah, no, I'm so, you know, looking forward to seeing Josh King hopefully back at his best. And look, it won't be long, I don't think, till he scores his first goal. And I think as soon as he scores his first goal, he's going to click. And, you know, I think as long as he scores his first goal within the next couple of games, and
it's I think he will click.
Hopefully it does come against Newcastle. I personally think then he'll get double figures for the season. Big call, I know, but I think he's literally, like, he did that interview at the end with Gifted Noel Williams, which I thought was brilliant by the club, by the way.
That was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So refreshing to get like an ex-player on to actually interview and talk about like what he would experience as well, and just talk like it wasn't a normal interview that you'd have from a journalist. It was actually more of an in-depth, insightful interview from someone who's played the game.
Yeah, yeah, and just watching that interview, you can tell that, you know, he is getting more confident with more game time. I think he said that was the first 90 minutes he's played for quite some time. So, you know, that's going to help as well. But I do genuinely think he gives off the vibe that with more game time, he will come, like, it will definitely happen for him. And I think he can get double figures.
I think another point is as well is, you know, the front three are playing so, so well at the moment. And you know, Cucho can't really get a look at this guy.
I mean, he's
coming off
mad,
the bench in spits and spats. But Cucho at the moment's really a Carabao Cup player, isn't he?
Yeah,
yeah, and you still got JP10 to come back into the fold as well.
This is what I mean. This is why I think this is the best front line we've had since that 14-15 promotion season. Like, I genuinely think that we are so blessed with these players. And, you know, as you say, Ben, JP10 to come back as well. I cannot wait. I do, however, think, and I don't want to get on this topic too much because it would be going sort of off topic again, but I do think we are going to see JP Tenney more of a midfield role in terms of a more attacking midfielder role. Maybe in the number 10, I don't know. But yeah, we've got these to come back. And on Dennis as well, I think he will get, you know, he will get goals this season as well. He's obviously on two already this season. He's very, very capable of getting 10 goals as well, I think, this season. So, you know, hopefully it's going to be an exciting season going forward.
Are we going to see a season where all three have got 10 goals this season, double figures for all the front three?
I would be very, very surprised if we did.
Champions League if we do.
Well, this is it. To have your front three all on a minimum of 10 each, that's quite incredible, to be honest.
What do you think? Sar's on three. Dennis is on two. I know King hasn't even scored yet, but
it's coming against Newcastle, Ben. You called it.
It's hat-trick against Newcastle.
Yeah, hat-trick against Newcastle. I love that. But yeah, no, I am really, really excited to see what they can do for the rest of this season. And I think that they will get some goals between them. They really, really will. Ben, as Ben mentioned there, Ismaïla Sarr's got 3 goals for the season. His second coming on the 80th minute. And it was a VAR call. And it's gone in our favour. And, you know, I think brilliant, you know, VAR... they're trying to be more sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, they're trying to be more fluid with it in terms of, you know, it's not going to be taking as long, and they're not drawing these stupid lines, they're not zooming in, and people's elbows aren't playing them offside, their fingertips, their fingernails. I remember one, you know, I think it was Sheffield United against Tottenham, because he was a size 10 or 11 or a 12, his foot was offside. If he had smaller feet, he'd have been onside. And like, it's just crazy. So it is refreshing to see it being dealt with so quickly, and they're not being so anal about it as well. But Again, I think, was it Josh King that the one-on-one was saved? Good save by Tim Krul. And
yeah,
then
Tom Cleverley played the initial pass through, actually.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tom Cleverley. He was brilliant as well.
He was running down every lost cause again. It was like that Tom Cleverley from last season, wasn't it, Ben?
100% pressing from the front, just setting the tempo. He just leads by example as well. And you know what you're going to get from Tom Cleverley. He gives 110%. And I just feel like when Tom Cleverley's on the pitch and he's doing all of that, it lifts everyone else. And he's like, you have to play him. You have to find a position for him in that team because he just increases everyone else's workload and just gets the best out of everyone. And for him to chase down the ball there and slip in the ball for Josh King, it just shows what he can bring to his side.
Yeah, we saw it so many times last season. I mean, one that sticks out for me in terms of his eagerness to chase down and he's chasing lost causes was that goal against Huddersfield at home where he chased it down and he slid in and he got there before the keeper. You know, maybe a little bit of luck in terms of the keeper probably should have come out, to be honest. But in terms of, you know, chasing every lost cause and everything else was brilliant. I do think that Tom Cleverley had a bit of a stinker against Brighton, if I'm brutally honest. That's probably not one of his best performances in a Watford shirt. Possibly one of his worst ones. And that pains me to say it because he is an absolute trooper. But he was back to his best against Norwich, and he's chasing down, as you rightly said, Ben, slipped in Josh King. Josh King couldn't convert for his first of the season. The rebound then, Ismail Assar cleaned it up, and it was game over. James, you know, 3-1, you know, we'd not scored in the last three games. We're up to 11th now, I think it is. Silly question, I know, because it's only going to provide one answer. But just tell me, how huge was that? Like, in terms of getting results from games that we should be getting, this is where the problem was in that 1920 season. We were playing these teams and we weren't picking up results against these teams. So to do it this time round, and, you know, 6 points... There's teams near the bottom. You know, you've got Norwich on 0 points, Burnley on 1 point, Newcastle on 2, Leeds on 3. And, yeah, we're only 5 games in, but we're on 6 points. There is a little bit of a cushion. Again, I want to stress, we're only 5 games in. But how big a confidence boost will that be for the players going into this game against, well, firstly, Stoke, although I do think it'll be mainly fringe players, and B, going into Newcastle, which, again, for me, another opportunity to pick up 3 points and be on 9 points after 6 games.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. And for me, I'm just looking at it as an opportunity to, you know, beat Stoke, which we should be doing with the players we've got. Yeah. And then if we beat Newcastle, you know, that's 3 games then that we would have won in a row. Confidence should be high. And I think after Newcastle, we've got Leeds away, haven't we?
So, we have indeed.
You know, there's an opportunity there to, you know, to shoot right up the table, and, you know, we could be clear of Burnley, Newcastle, Norwich. And actually, you know, in terms of our attacking players especially, I think we've got better attacking players than Burnley, better attacking players than Norwich, and better attacking players than Newcastle, bar Sam Maximin. So, you know, if we win, beat Stoke, beat Newcastle, you know, I'd be over the moon with that. Really, really would.
Yeah, and I think the way that I'm looking at it at the moment is it's almost like we're in a mini league with other teams, right? And it is a cliche thing to say, but we're in a bit of a mini league, you know, with the likes of Brentford, Crystal Palace, Southampton this season, you know, Burnley, Newcastle, those teams you just reeled off. So to be beating these teams is a bonus. To be getting as many points as possible over them is also a bonus. You know, it's only, you know, Brentford's who I sort of were expecting to be down there this season. They're the only team that are above us in terms of teams I thought we'd be sort of fighting and sort of clashing with this season in terms of, you know, getting one over them and, you know, trying to compete with to stay in the division. And, you know, there'll be people listening to this thinking, he does realise we are only 5 games in. I know, but you've got to pick these points up early doors. Obviously, as you say, we have got Stoke on Tuesday night, which is the Carabao Cup round 2. I do it, you know, we should be beating them, yes. That's no disrespect to Stoke, who I think have got a brilliant team this season. Obviously, a familiar face will be playing, I'd imagine, in the form of Ben Wilmot. So we know that he's a good enough defender. So against our fringe players, it could be a little bit of a tough task. But Ben, in terms of, you know, turning, sort of reflecting on the Norwich result, turning your attention to Stoke and Newcastle, it would be massive, as James said, to pick up a win there and then pick up a win against Newcastle, and then also Leeds, who have been struggling as well. We could be looking at 3-4 wins in the on the bounce, or even if we pick a draw up there, could be looking at 4 games unbeaten. That confidence then, you know, continues flowing, and before you know it, we could be propping ourselves up the table, couldn't we?
We could, yeah. It's nice to think like that, but I'm going to keep my feet on the ground a little bit here. Yeah. I don't want to get too carried away. We've got to treat it as one. we need to treat it as one game at a time. Let's celebrate the victory over Norwich. Fantastic to pick up 3 points against a team that we got promoted with, and they actually finished above us. So we've got one above them already. Stoke, anything could happen in the Stoke game. I think Stoke are going to make lots of changes as well. Yeah. So I think both teams are going to make play a lot of fringe players. Stoke are fighting for promotion this season. They sit fifth in the championships so far after a really good start. I wouldn't be surprised if Ben Wilmot's actually rested for that either, which would be a shame. It would be good to see him face us. But the big one's Norwich. Not too worried about the Stoke game. The big one's Norwich. The main thing this season is to stay in the Premier League. Newcastle, they're having a lot of issues on and off the pitch at the moment. I believe the Newcastle fans are actually going to do a protest at Vicarage Road on Saturday as well.
So I hear, yeah.
Which, in my eyes, is just putting more negativity on their club and their players. I'm not sure the players will enjoy it. I think it could be quite a hostile atmosphere towards Steve Bruce, which could translate onto the field towards the players. So I do think Newcastle is a game we have to be looking at getting 3 points and probably getting a few goals against them as well.
Yeah.
But it's confidence now, isn't it? I think our front three are full of confidence. I think if we can maybe get Sirieta back into that back line and play him against Truce Ekong, who I must say, Truce Ekong was brilliant Saturday as well. And I feel like he's growing into the Watford shirt. His disposition on the ball, his passing hasn't been great last season, but I feel like he's worked on it. And this season, he's not really put a foot wrong. I think Sirieta was more of a weaker link against Wolves the other week, but Truce Ekong didn't put a foot wrong against Wolves. It was brilliant against Norwich. So I feel like we're slowly sorting out that back line. I know it's against Norwich that we played against and they didn't test us too much, but it's still confidence for the back line as well as 100%. Our forward three.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting what you say there about the Newcastle game. You know, as you rightly point out, there's reports that they're going to be protesting. I've got a little bit of a soft spot for Newcastle. I must admit, to be honest, I did piss me off a bit that first season. I think it was a 15-16 season. I can't remember the exact word they used, what they called to describe us, but they called us a small club. Well, not a small club, because we are a small club, but they basically had the arrogance of, this is Watford, they're a small club, they're a bit of a nobodies, and we should be beating them. I think that season we beat them 3 times, twice in the league and once in the FA Cup. So, you know, we got our own back, so to speak. And I think recently our record against Newcastle has been quite decent. We drew against them the season we went down away at St James's Park. And we beat them at home in front of no crowd. That was one of the games back after the lockdown had sort of, well, not eased, but football had returned. Projects, whatever it was called, I can't remember. But yeah, it was 2-1, two Schrodini penalties for us. So our recent record against Newcastle is not too bad, actually. So I'm silently hopeful. And like I say, I do have a little bit of a soft spot for them. So to see what they're going through at the moment in terms of the owner and, you know, I don't know why as well. I quite like Steve Bruce. So there has been reports of bust-ups at training grounds. The player's not happy with the way Steve Bruce has been taking the training. And I think Dwight Gale and another player, I can't remember who the other player was.
Oh, is it Hayden?
They had a bit of a spat at training. And I think Brucey's sort of blamed Hayden for Ronaldo's goal, second goal against, no, the first goal against them in the 4-1 loss at Old Trafford. So things aren't good at Newcastle at the moment, and I don't wish that on any club other than Luton and Bournemouth and probably Palace as well. But I don't wish that on many clubs, to be honest. And but I do think we have to take advantage of that. They're going to be processed in. The atmosphere in the away end is probably going to be a little bit hostile. The players and the manager probably aren't seeing eye to eye at the moment as well. So we have to take advantage. Listen, I'm saying all this now. They're going to absolutely wallop us 4-0, aren't they? But yeah, it is a game that we need to take advantage of. And I think we can. And maybe look to go for the jugular a little bit as well. So hopefully we can you know, really... you know, use that as in our advantage and pick up another 3 points, because it would be, you know, an absolutely massive one. And I think Benny's right to maybe keep his feet on the ground a little bit and get one game at a time and all this. And, you know, we've got some winnable games. We've got some games coming up where I'd be happy with draws as well. I think the Liverpool game at home as well, which is the week after Leeds, unless there's another international break in between the Leeds and the Liverpool game, I'm not sure. But, I think that's going to be an interesting one, purely because of what happened last time. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting we're going to win 3-0 again, but I think it will play on their minds a little bit, and I think we'll be in it more than people are expecting. So that's going to be interesting as well. That's on BT, so I'll be looking forward to watching that one. But yeah, hopefully this can sort of kickstart a bit of positivity. There has been a little bit of negativity around on social media recently. Not too much, but a few tweets cropping up here and there. So hopefully that can. A win tomorrow would be great as well, albeit it's in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, yes, I want to win. Always want to win. But, you know, it's a Carabao Cup at the end of the day. It's a Premier League I'm more bothered about. So fingers crossed we can, you know, stay on track with that. And then just one more thing as well before we wrap up the show. Our friends over at the Golden Pages fanzine, talking of the Stoke game, will be outside Vicarage Road tomorrow, and they're selling their fanzine. They've recently brought one out as well, so make sure you go and grab your copy from the guys outside of Vicarage Road. They'll be selling issue 22 before the game from the usual place, and it's £3, and you get 48 pages of what I think is absolutely fantastic content. You know, me and Ben did an interview in there as well, the Troy Deeney episodes, the Troy Deeney edition, sorry, and the stuff they do is really, really good. So help them out. You know, obviously coronavirus has hit them hard, not being able to go to games and still producing these amazing fanzines has been hard for them. So, you know, £3, it's the cost of probably a soft drink or a pie or whatever. So help them out and go and make sure you pick that up just outside the Red Line, outside the club shop. So yeah, go and make sure you pick that out. But yeah, myself and Ben will be back next week to hopefully again talk about another victory, this time against Newcastle at home. So fingers crossed we can talk about that. But as always, thank you so much for tuning in to Voices of the Vic. As I say, we'll be back next week to talk about the Newcastle game. But till then, stay safe and come on, you horns.